Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is just a quick reminder. If you would like to hear the show a day early, we release it over on our Patreon. So head over to patreon.com/analogtalk, and we put this up around noon, around lunchtime. So yeah, if you'd like to get the show a day early, or you would like to help support the show, Patreon is the way to do it. patreon.com/analogtalk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's guest, we have Nick Carver joining us. Hey, Nick.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Nick. Thanks for joining us. We're super excited to chat with you today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Never pass up an opportunity to talk film photography or talk about myself.
So
I get to combine both of those loves. Yeah.
So for the listeners who may not know you, do you mind giving them a background on yourself and how you got started in photography and all that jazz?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a working photographer based out of Orange County. I do primarily architectural photography, so commercial properties, office buildings and things like that. And I teach photography, and I got into it around the year 2000. Mm-hmm. I got into it through an elective class in my seventh grade middle school. And it was an elective class that wasn't for photography. It was a class called technology. And they had all these different modules you could take. So there's like a robotics module and a woodshop module and all that kind of stuff. And one of the modules was photography. And a friend of mine who was taking the elective class with me was really pushing to do the photography one. He's like, we got to do the photography. My brother did it last year. He says the best. And I told him, that sounds boring. Let's do robotics or woodshop. Let's like make something with our hands. Photography sounds boring. What are you going to do? Take pictures of things? That just sounded so, I don't know, boring to me. And luckily he was persistent, and I caved, and we took photography, and I kind of fell in love with it right away. So I don't know, I guess it goes to show that peer pressure is not always a bad thing.
Yeah, right.
he talked me into it. And I've thanked him since. His name's Mike Flynn. He's a great guy, but he kind of pushed me into it. And then the class sparked my love for it. And then that's kind of all I've been doing ever since.
Wow. Man. Is he doing photography?
No, he's making stuff. He does like CNC machining and all that kind of stuff. So he's very creatively minded, but he didn't keep going with photography.
He's working with his hands. Still good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Still making stuff. But it was a great class because it was all black and white 35 millimeter film. So we, you know, we did a very, very short crash course on shutter, aperture, and ISO. I'm sure I didn't understand any of it and I didn't retain any of it. But then the darkroom processing part of it was really, I think, what hooked me. Because, I mean, you can imagine a bunch of 13-year-olds getting shoved into a dark room saying, load this roll of film onto this wheel and click it back and forth until it's loaded up, and then we're going to develop it. It's just giggle fest galore, you know. It's just fun stuff. So it's and then, you know, printing in the enlarger is just I mean, anyone who's done it knows how magical it is. But you have this piece of paper that you've exposed to an image, and it doesn't look like anything yet under the red light, and there can't possibly be anything in there in that piece of paper. But then you put it through the chemicals and an image starts to show up. Is just kind of hooked me pretty quick.
I definitely did photography. I think it was like 9th or 10th grade, and our darkroom, we called it the Bat Cave because it had one of those like circular doors that
you had a good darkroom.
And we spent probably like 25% of the class just like going in and out of the door just because it was fun, you know. It was
yeah,
just
like an airlock.
Yeah Man, so it was traditional. It was a traditional black and white photography class. Cool.
Yeah,
I guess it was 2000. We weren't really in the digital age yet at that point.
Yeah, we were right. That was right around the corner.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful that I got into it just before digital hit, because by the time I got to high school, that class was gone. Mm-hmm. My high school had they had a photography class, but it was like quote unquote photography class. It was really a Photoshop class.
Okay.
So it was digital cameras and basically just looking at how to manipulate things. And it's kind of the only avenue I had throughout high school. So I ended up kind of having to pursue it on my own and learn it on my own and through books and magazines and all that kind of stuff. But I was one of those guys that, you know, in the beginning, I was never going to go digital and real photographers don't shoot digital and all this kind of stuff. And like, I was kind of just, I think as a lot of photographers do in the beginning, I was just doing my best impression of the photographers that I admired. So my style was basically just a carbon copy of Galen Rowell and, you know, David and Mark Munch, I never know how to pronounce their name, but just like super colorful landscapes, shooting reversal film, Fuji Velvia 100 and Velvia 50 were my go-tos. And I just was never, never going to digital. That is for, that's for hacks and everything. And then, when I decided to do it professionally in 2006, I kind of had to embrace digital. There's really no way to, especially with my kind of budget back then, to shoot film for professional gigs. So I got a digital camera and kept shooting film and digital kind of back and forth. And then eventually film just kind of faded out of my life, unfortunately. And I thought that wasn't a problem until about 2012 when I was about ready to give up photography, but it was my photography life has been in kind of these weird 6-year stages. So I got into it in the year 2000 and you know, fell in love with it, and I was shooting only film until about 2006, with you know, except for little digital point shoot snapshots every now and then, but mainly film, and I was hardcore about it. And then 2006 rolled around. I decided I'm going to do this for a living. So I opened my business and switched pretty quickly to full digital. And then my business started growing pretty good. And I was, at the time, I wasn't doing as many photo shoots because really all I cared about was landscape photography. And there's no money in landscape photography. I ended up teaching just kind of on a whim, doing some private lessons and just to get some money in the door. And that took off really quick and started growing like crazy. And I was delivering so many lessons and started delivering classes at the local community center. And that just kept growing and growing and growing. And then by 2012, I had my own classroom in Orange County, California. I had online courses that were going pretty well. I was doing private lessons. I was finally like making a living as a photographer. And I know some people would cry foul on that. Well, you're a teacher, that's where you're making money. But I like to think I was making money through my photography, so therefore a photographer. But in 2012, I was just, I got this real intense burnout where I was just, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was repeating myself in terms of photos. I was just kind of doing beach sunset after beach sunset after beach sunset with the foggy water in the foreground, foggy water in the foreground. And they were really good versions of that. But I was so burned out, and I was kind of, I mean, to be completely honest, I was a little fed up with the photography community. I just felt like it was all about cameras and megapixels and, you know, who's got the newest mirrorless, should I do mirrorless or DSLR? And I was just like, who cares? I don't care. And it just seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of support or warmth in the photography community, but it's because I was in the digital photography community. And, you know, 2012, I was just ready to call it quits. And I was literally looking at alternate career paths. Wow. So I was, I was looking at like, well, maybe I can become a helicopter pilot. And I've never even been in a helicopter. I don't know if that's a good job for me. And I was at one point looking through UPS career opportunities website because needed to get distance from photography because it wasn't fun anymore. And I'm one of these people that tries to like think my way out of every problem. So I'll just sit and like ruminate on it. Like what's the thing that's got to be fixed? And then I would get done with my work day and I'd come home to my parents' house because that's where I was living at the time. And I would sit in the backyard and just try and think like, why do I not like photography anymore? Why do I not like it anymore? Like, what's missing? What's wrong? And I would just think and think and think. And that's when I was toying with other career opportunities and all that kind of stuff. And then one day, it just like, I remember the position I was in. I remember what I was wearing. It just clicked. I was just like, hey, I could shoot film again. Like, it had never occurred to me that like anyone was shooting film or that it was even possible. And it's kind of a Johnny come lately to the film renaissance. But it just hit me, and it's like, a switch just got flipped. It was immediately, all of that burnout just completely disappeared in that next 2 or 3 minutes. And then I was like, okay, well, I still have my 35 millimeter. I'll break that out. I'll go to Profoto Connection, buy some Fuji Pro Via 100. That'll be some good film to get back into it with. And then like my immediate next thought was like, ooh, I could shoot large format. I've never shot large format before. So I'm like,
floodgates are open.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of just hop skipped over medium format. And I just decided, you know what, if I'm going to go into this, I'm going to go big. So then it just, like you said, floodgates opened. I got to buy a new camera. I got to learn how to load sheet film. I got to learn to close the shutter after I cock it and before I pull the dark light out. Like, there was so much new stuff to learn.
I do that all the time.
Oh, man. How many people have taken pictures of their own face looking in front of the camera trying to decide if it's open or not? So it was just the film part of it just completely sparked the passion again. And that's kind of when I realized, I didn't fall in love with photography. I fell in love with film photography.
Yeah.
And then kind of from there, it's just blossomed into this huge thing where my YouTube channel took off against all my expectations. And the film photography community is so awesome. And it's like, it's everything I wish the community was back when I was kind of burnt out and jaded. Like, it's just so supportive, and people are focusing on the art. I mean, obviously we love geeking out on cameras, but it seems it's more like, well, what's the best deal you got on your Mamiya?
Exactly.
It's not like, who's got the latest mirrorless? It's like, who got the raddest deal on their box of film, you know?
You got that for what?
Exactly.
Yeah, like my RZ67, I paid like $450 for it on eBay with the 90 millimeter lens.
No, okay.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was buying, but that was one of my best purchases.
So good.
Yeah, so it's been kind of a long up and down bumpy road, but I have to say that the film photography renaissance really saved me from turning my back on photography completely. So I'm eternally grateful to it.
And you're not a helicopter pilot either.
So thank God. Yeah, that's not exactly a growing career either, with drones coming in and everything.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, so the YouTube channel, we should talk about that because, man, I love your channel. I know a bunch of the listeners.
Thank you.
Probably love your channel as well. Like, what, because you started YouTube, what, 2012, I think you started posting those videos, is that
it was shortly after I got into large format, so
like that. That's pretty early for someone to be doing YouTube, especially now with it, like everybody wants to have a YouTube channel now. But what kind of brought you there? Like, what, it with the teaching aspect or what?
You know, it's, I owe it all to Ben Horn.
Oh yeah, Ben. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never met him in person, but I saw his videos shooting 8x10 and, you know, I saw the videos and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. And I never thought I would, well, like I knew I wanted to see someone using a large format camera, but it never occurred to me that like someone else would, because it just seems like I'm in my own world. No one else cares about photography but me. But I watched this video, I'm like, God, that's so cool. Maybe it seems kind of fun too, like going out and talking about it while you're doing it. So I went out and did one in the Alabama Hills here in California, and went out and just had no idea what I was doing. I was just using like a Canon Rebel as a video camera, and didn't know what I was doing with audio and all that kind of stuff, and kind of threw something together. And when I posted that first video, I mean, I clicked post almost with a wince. Like, I was like, okay, here it goes. Because I had kind of seen YouTube comments, and I was just waiting to just be torn apart and everyone telling me how dumb I am, and you have no idea what you're doing and all that. And I posted the video, and I just couldn't believe how positive the comments were and how friendly people were and how many views I got and all that kind of stuff. So I just kind of started doing it, you know, when I had the time. And I still pretty much only do it when I have the time, but I can't believe how much it's blown up. I still post videos wincing. Like, this is the one where they're going to hate me.
Me too.
It's scary. But
YouTube is, it's those trolls, you know? You never know when they come out and bite.
Yes, exactly. But I've been very fortunate. I mean, like, way less than 0.5% of people who comment post anything negative. So I've been really, really fortunate to encounter mostly very positive people. And that's been encouraging.
That's great. And that's turned into, like, your teaching stuff, right?
Well, I was posting these videos and people would see me using my Pentax digital spot meter, figuring out my exposures and everything. And I would get so many comments and emails saying like, hey, what's your metering technique? Can you do a tutorial on metering? And can you do a quick video on metering? And, you know, I'd kind of always reply like, it's a little more involved than I can do in just, you know, a little 5-minute YouTube video. So yeah, maybe I'll put together a course someday. And then I would kind of tease that in my videos. Hey, I'll do a course someday. And then so many people were replying, hey, when's that course coming along?
Once you put it out there, you gotta do it by now.
Stop teasing it.
They don't forget.
So that kind of gave me the kick in the pants to do it. And then so about a month and a half ago, I released the online course, which is Master Manual Metering for Film Photography. And it's just all metering techniques for film photography. And I thought maybe 3 or 4 people would sign up if I'm lucky, but it's just been blowing up like crazy. So I guess there's a demand
great.
For
that's
it.
That's great.
So,
yeah.
And the feedback's been very, very, very positive. So again, I'm real lucky to be part of a community that everyone's so nice and supportive, and it's been great. So thank you for YouTube for giving me an outlet to actually talk about this stuff. It's really cool.
Oh, I was just going to compliment your video production on your videos. Mm-hmm. Is just like top notch. Like I went through when we were emailing you and talking to you about getting you on the show. I was just like, I'm going to binge this stuff in the next 2 days again and just watch everything.
So you've had your fill of me by now.
It's just like, I love it. I love your, is video something that you're passionate about as well? Is that something you include with like your photography, or where did that kind of come from? Or is that just like an organic thing that happened?
I do enjoy it. The editing part of it is very fun. The timing
I enjoy that
part
too.
Of it is very fun. And it really stimulates my brain. Like if I'm editing a video, I can't think about anything else. Cause I'm fretting about, should I cut it off at this frame or the next frame? Like I'm getting down to one frame. My brother's actually a professional videographer and video editor. So he's helped me a little bit just on kind of giving me some tips here and there. But I appreciate the compliment because I'm always surprised people like my video production, because I look at stuff by like, I don't know, Ben Horn or Thomas mm-hmm. Heaton or something, mm-hmm. and they're doing slider shots and drones and like they got the epic color grading and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I don't have any of that stuff in my video. And I'm very envious of it because I just don't have the patience for it, I guess. And I kind of try and fall back on storytelling and timing and less on the, kind of epic visuals. And I'm glad it makes up for it, because I'm just not the kind of guy that's going to break out a drone and do a shot of me. I'm too hectic and too like trying to load film and trying to do all this kind of stuff. It's just too much to think about.
Yeah, that I couldn't imagine like having to fly a drone, roll a slider, and then shoot 8x10 or 4x5.
You need like a team at that point. You need like a crew. Yeah. You know, it gets a little crazy if you're trying to do it all. Like, okay, I'm going to stand here. I'm going to run over here. Press record, run back, you know.
And then, every shot of you walking into the scene, you had to hit record, walk in, walk back, turn it off, pick up the camera, and then walk over. It's like, I'm maxed out on my time and effort when I'm out there as it is. And then I start making mistakes like, I forgot to move the film advance forward because I was thinking about the video camera and things like that. So
speaking of the power of editing, though, I've definitely shot stuff where I'm like, this is crap. I don't have anything.
Yeah.
And then you go and I just like put it together. I'm like, what? That worked. I'm
gonna slap a narration on it.
Put some music in the background.
Yeah, that's always nice when you come back. You're like, I got nothing here.
Yeah.
And then you just put it into Premiere Pro. I'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Magic of editing.
But I don't think you need all that crazy drone and stuff. The storytelling alone, like you nailed it with that. Like it's a strong, powerful point of your videos, and I think it's definitely what keeps people captivated. Well, and your beautiful photographs too. But
thank you.
I just wanted to find out your little video secrets there, because you know Chris and I both kind of dabble in the YouTube thing every once in a while. And
sure. Well, I'm using a crappy old camcorder. For no reason.
Nice.
I was trying to do the DSLR video kind of thing with the shallow depth of field and all that epic cinema look, and just trying to get it to focus on me every time. I was going batty, like it would drive me insane. And then the audio and the fact that the video cuts off at 29 minutes 29 seconds, and I'm just like, and the batteries die all the time. And then my brother, the video editor, he just told me, he's like, dude, you need a video camera. Like you're doing run and gun style video camera. Like DSLRs and all that stuff, they're great for doing like interviews and talking heads and all that kind of stuff, where you can like dial it in, you can set up lighting, you can fine tune the audio. But I'm doing such run and gun stuff. He's like, you need the fast autofocus of video. You need the lens built into it so you're not switching lenses. You need zebra striping. You need more flexible audio inputs. And then so I went on eBay and I bought a Canon XA20, which is just 1080p. It's the camcorder you see people using at Disneyland to video kids, you know. And it looks good and it's got, you know, all the features I need and it makes shooting a lot easier.
Man, that's a good tip right there. I need to keep that.
Well, I kind of started looking at it too. Like the shows I try and, it sounds weird to say shows I try and emulate, but TV shows that I admire that I'm kind of trying to mimic the style of a little bit are like Man vs. Wild.
That's a good one.
Yeah, great show. Oddly enough, Dirty Jobs. I really like that show. Even This Old House, strangely. But their style is very much run and gun. You look at behind the scenes footage, they all just have shoulder mounted camcorders. They're not doing like the big cinema style cameras. And I kind of took that as a cue. Like, they probably know what they're doing. There's a reason they're using those cameras that are a little more run and gun.
I love that.
Genius. Yeah.
So, Nick, are you still teaching like in person? Are you doing seminars or?
Yeah, I do. I do classes here in Orange County. I still have my classroom, and I do private lessons now and then. It's less than I used to because I actually do 3 or 4 architectural shoots per week now. So that tends to take up my time. But the in-person classes are all digital based. I've had a couple people ask for film, but the vast majority of my clientele over the years has been middle-aged to older, often retirees. So they got expendable income, they have time, they want to take better pictures of their grandkids. So they
Cute.
And cameras are very intimidating for them. So I'm kind of able to walk them through it. So, but that's been really great. Teaching's really rewarding. So I don't know that I would ever get rid of that side of my business, even if I could.
I think you should do a film photography one.
I'm toying with it.
You know?
Few people have been asking. I've been toying
with
it.
I'm a little biased maybe, but.
I would love to teach it. I mean, teaching film is so fun. And I often feel there's just so much more to it. Because, I mean, you think, oh, shutter speed, aperture, and ISO, and metering. But then you're like, oh, but pushing and pulling film. Oh, but developing times.
Yeah.
And there's like, and pre-exposure and filters and all this kind of stuff. It's like, it's kind of an endless rabbit hole.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's never ending. I'm always learning something new.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Same.
Yeah, it's nonstop.
Man, so do you do any of your developing and stuff at home anymore, or you just send everything out pretty much?
You know, I used to, or at least I was doing black and white.
Yeah.
And I don't actually take that many pictures. Like when I go out, you know, coming home with 2 rolls of film is a pretty standard day for me. So I was throwing away so many chemicals because they would just go stale. And I always
That's
felt bad
problem.
About that. Yeah, and it's tough because, I mean, if I was a street photographer or something where I was shooting like every day, then it'd probably make more sense. But I'm lucky enough to live near a pretty big processing lab, and they do black and white, C41, E6. And I just realized at some point, you know what, it's worth $5 to have someone else do it, not have to dispose of all these chemicals and take time and all that.
Especially with, I would feel, I know you shoot a lot of slide film and it's real touchy, and like with temperatures being dead on I would be so bummed to take such like an awesome picture of like that laundromat or the tobacco store and all that stuff that you take all these great pictures and then just like botch it up and developing.
Yeah. And actually the guy at my lab told me as much. I mean, I was telling him like, oh, I'm looking to get one of those Jobos because I want to start doing E6 myself. And he's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
He's like, if you're half a degree off on your chemicals, you're going to ruin it.
That's
just
too intimidating.
And that was good advice. I mean, obviously, he's a little biased because he wants me to take the film to him. But, but he's right. That would have been way too much headache for me.
I was just talking to somebody on Instagram about it. They had developed color film for the first time and they were like super proud and all that stuff. They're like, it was so scary because you got to keep the development at a certain temperature and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, luckily my style calls for like dirty, grungy photos.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not like dead on exact with things when I do it. So it doesn't matter that much. But if you're like a landscape photographer or something like that, it would be a little more important to stay in the guidelines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're getting severe color casts or you're throwing off the exposure way, that's a sad day because you put a lot of work into exposing that one frame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. I've actually never tried a lab. I
I know. I still can't believe that.
Isn't that weird? I mean, I've sent stuff to like Walgreens and stuff and did 1 hour photo, but like, I don't know. I guess I'm stubborn when it comes to it.
A control freak.
Yeah.
I dig it. I wish I had the energy for that because I do like having control over everything, but yeah, it's just, it's so much equipment to have and so much, yeah. I'm not as good with the chemistry part of it. It's a little harder for me to wrap my mind around some of that stuff. So I'm always afraid I'm probably going to screw it up more than a lab would anyway, you know?
Yeah, Timothy, you've never experienced the Christmas morning feeling of like having to wait 2 weeks to get your film back. You shoot it, develop it. Right, same day.
Yeah, that waiting time is nice. That's tantalizing.
Especially when you forgot what you shot, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, whoa, I actually took a really good picture.
You're this is the best Christmas ever.
I wish I had the room to actually have a wet, dark room, though.
Yeah.
That's the next goal. I have a coworker. She's been teasing out, letting me rent out. She has an all dark, like it looks like a prison cell in her basement. It was supposed to be a laundry room and it was never finished. And she's like, you know, you can just come and try it and if we can work something out. And I'm just like, man, if I do that, I'm never going to be home.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're like, I'm going to take over the whole room and you will never do it.
You will never see me.
Yeah.
Yeah. In California, too, we at least have an excuse. We don't have basements.
Yeah,
so getting a light tight box is a little tougher out here. But
yeah, especially with all that sunshine.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would love to do darkroom printing. I shoot so much 6x17. I'm not even aware of an enlarger that could print as big as I want from a 6x17 that it doesn't even seem realistic to me. But that's such a cool part of analog photography is the printing part of it. And you just need so much equipment and space. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just a whole second hobby.
Yeah.
In addition to photography, you know?
Mm-hmm. Man, but that's another thing I wanted to touch on while we have you here is your passion for printing. Like, I love those videos. Like, cause I know after you do like an on location video that like in like a month or so, we're going to be doing like a print or a scanning video coming up soon. And like, I'm just like, man, I can't wait for this because I love that stuff. I love, you know, printing and mounting and putting together like little art shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just,
it brings a level of gratification to me that I just haven't found in any other capacity. Mm. Looking at film on a light table can be pretty close.
Yeah.
But it's not something you can share with other people really unless you invite them over to the light table and say, look at it. That's weird.
Come on, gather around.
But the prints, you know, it costs money and I always want to print big because I got a fetish for huge prints for some reason.
Yeah.
And it costs money and it's an investment and I got to find some place to store it and all that kind of stuff. And there's plenty of downsides to say about it, but it's just not enough to outweigh the feeling of having that print hanging on the wall, especially if it's framed and it's looking real clean like you want it. And it's just, to me, that's the end product. And I think, I mean, without getting too philosophical here, but there's such a lack of tangibility in modern society with just everything going digital, you know, photography or otherwise. Like, we don't even hold our music anymore. We don't have CDs.
Right.
We don't have records. We don't have anything. So just everything has become so intangible. And in terms of human history, that's happened in the past 2 seconds. So I think our brains and our DNA and our genetics just haven't caught up yet. And we still really need tangibility in our lives. And it's easy to think you don't.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that kind of led to my burnout with digital photography is like it just never felt like I never reached the finish line. You know, I'd get prints made sometimes, but the quantity of pictures you're taking that you never touch and you never interact with physically and all that kind of stuff, it just feels like you're not quite making it there. And film photography gets me much closer to the finish line, and then the print pushes me completely over the finish line. It's just the complete end product.
That was deep right
that
was,
that's a perfect way to describe it too. I actually just had something printed and framed. I went to Israel with my boyfriend and his family, and you know, they're very gracious, and you know, it was just a phenomenal trip. So I wanted to say thank you, and I got this shot on the beach in Israel of this guy in a Speedo and his butt is hanging out. And his mom was like, that's so great, I want a poster size print. And I was like, this is the perfect gift then.
Yeah.
So I had
I like this mom. She wants
I was like, I was almost afraid to show it to her. I was like, You know, like, here are my Israel poses. And she was like, that one's great. And even his dad, hilarious. He was like, that just reminds me of Israel. Like, that's just a great. I had it printed in a nice white frame. I actually used it. Have you guys ever heard of FrameBridge?
I have heard of it.
They're really great. You can send them physical prints or you can even, I think, upload the file and they'll print it and frame it for you. But it was a gorgeous white frame, and now it's hanging in their bathroom.
So, that's so proud.
But that feeling of like holding it in a frame is like, look at that, I did. Like, this is like art or whatever, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You really don't have to goad anybody into looking at it. You know, it's like, if it's on your phone, it's like, look at my phone. It's like, I don't want to look at your phone. It's like, or come look at my computer. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. No. But if you have a print hanging on the wall, people have to see it. And that's a nice way to kind of, I don't know, I guess force your images on people. Sounds kind of bad, but you're getting that satisfaction from sharing with people, especially when you can gift it to somebody and they love it.
Yeah.
That's just the best feeling ever.
Exactly.
The one video you did it was one of your art, you were doing like an art fest or something and it rained and you know, you didn't sell anything, but you had a lot of great conversations. And I do the art crawl down here. We do like a first Friday of every month. And for the last couple of years, I would do like two or three of the months out of the summer, I would post up at a couple places and show my stuff. And, you know, I probably sold maybe three or four things in ever.
Now that's a good feeling.
It's not even about that, though. It's just the people that come in and they're like, wow, like, you really have an eye. And what is this photo about? Like, man, you really see the one guy, the one that really sticks out to me forever, and I'll probably never forget it, was the guy that was like, I drive past that Baskin and Robbins every day on my way home from work. And like, you made me look at it in a way that like, I haven't ever seen it, you know? And I was just like,
that's cool.
Whoa, that's really crazy. Cause you know, I drive past it too. And like, the conversation you have when you're showing your stuff to people, and like, it's just such a cap to a lid to the whole thing, you know, you just like, there is a reason why I'm doing it. And
I mean, I kind of looked at it too, like, well, if I knew guaranteed I wasn't going to sell anything, let's say someone could 100% convince me you will never sell a print in your entire life, would I still do it? And would I still make prints? And the answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah. 100%.
So, it's obviously more for the interaction I get with people than the money. And in fact, I kind of run into a problem now where I'm like, I want to display them, but I don't want to sell them because I like where they're hanging in my home right now. I don't really want to replace them. But yeah, I was in a gallery for a little bit in Laguna Beach, California, which is kind of a little artsy beach town here in Orange County. And it was mostly painters. And one of the painters there was put it perfectly. He's like, this is emotional currency, like spiritual currency. Like you're not trying to make dollars, you're trying to make emotional and spiritual currency, because that's really why you're an artist, is to try and connect with people and communicate something, and you know, maybe show them something they haven't seen, like you just said with the guy. No, I never noticed it before. I drive by it every day, but it was your job and your place to get him to notice, and then now his life's a little bit better because he's noticed now, you know.
Man. I think that's like the best thing about photography and art in general, like people seeing things in a different way, or like being moved by something, you know, that they never really thought about before.
Especially if it's something they can't really put in words. Because like I get that, I tend to get a stronger reaction from paintings than I do other people's photography. Yeah. But certain paintings, it'll make me feel something that I can't put into words at all. My brother and I joke about it. We call it the vibes in the feels. I'm just trying to make the vibes in the feels out there. Like, I'm not going to try and explain what the picture's about. I don't want you to explain to me how it's making you feel. I just know that you're feeling something.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters to me, because that's all I like that feeling when I look at a painting and it makes me feel something that I can't explain.
Yeah, my boyfriend's he's a moderate art collector, but you know, we have a fairly small apartment, so we don't have a lot of space. So he tries to like, you know, sell stuff, to replace things, and he always wants to get my approval. You know, he'd be like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't like that. Well, why? I'm like, I don't know. I just don't like it. Like,
can't put my finger on it.
But I can tell you when I love something, I'm like, that, I love that. Like, I just, you know, I'm feeling all these things, but no, I don't like that.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you.
It's the like vibes. It's, you know?
Yeah. It's the wrong vibes.
Wrong
I
vibes.
Need the right vibes in here. Yeah.
Too funny.
Oh, geez. Well, that was good. That made me feel good.
You should. Making good art's vibes. Important, man. Yeah. Makes people feel good. And people ask me sometimes, like, the less than 0.5% of trolls that chime in on something, like, what are you trying to say with this photo? What does it even say? And I'm like, I usually respond, if I knew what I was trying to say, I'd be a writer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's so good.
like the photos are there because that's the only way I can figure out how to communicate this thing in me that I can't put into words.
That is so perfect.
Yeah. I like to think so. I like to think most things I say are perfect.
And I'm sure that troll's username is like Pikachu753. And
what? They didn't use their real name?
Yeah, right?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I saw on your Instagram story, I think it was like yesterday or the day before. I forget when it was, but that you had a pile of New 55 film.
Mm. Oh, man.
So talk, what's going on with that?
Yeah.
What are you doing with that?
So everyone knows New 55, I would hope. It's the new peel apart 4x5. And they were around, I don't know, a year ago or something, had the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't that into Polaroids at the time, so it didn't really appeal to me. But then I got super into Polaroids because someone got me an SX70, so of course I went deep into Polaroids. And then I decided, ooh, I really want to try 4x5 peel apart.
Yes,
and then I went to the website, we shut down operations, and I'm like, man, it sucks. Like, I just missed it. Like, another film company bites the dust. But, and then, like, maybe 3 weeks ago, I got an email from Famous Format saying, New 55 PN400. It's 400 speed film now. And I'm like, wait a minute, they're coming out with new film? So then I went to the link. And sure enough, PN100 is back. PN400 is back. And I didn't have a holder either, so I had to buy a holder.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it like, okay, so $75 for, I think, 5 frames or something like that. Yeah, so that's $15 a frame. I was like, ooh, I don't know if... Even for me, this is a bit much. But I ended up buying 3 boxes because I'm like, I don't know if they're gonna be back.
And, sure.
But then, like, I guess he had gotten so many orders that he was super backlogged. Mm. So I kept checking my order status, and it never said shipped. And I'm like, it was a scam.
No,
they never came back. This is a scam. And I emailed him trying to find out what was up, and he was so busy he couldn't email me back. But then eventually it shipped, and now I'm hoping to go out to the desert this week to photograph with it and fight the heat. I would rather go out when it's much cooler, but
so
I just can't wait. I'm super eager to, I'm super eager to shoot that film. I hope I don't screw it up because $15 per mistake is not fun.
No. Nope.
Yeah, it's no joke. And that's how, like, the Polaroid stuff that you can, I think the last production was like 2008 or 2009 or something. And there's still some people that have like regular type 55 film. And
jeez.
I saw some on the Facebook group, and the guy was like, I got 3 boxes sealed, $200 a box, and it's 10 shots for $200. And it's like, the last time I did that, the box was a dud.
Yeah.
It was a, and it hurt. It really hurt. Cause I remember I was like, I couldn't wait. I was so excited when I got it. Cause I was given a couple boxes that worked years ago when I didn't even know what I had. You know what I mean? I just had some stuff and blew through it, and was I regret it still to this day. I mean, at least I got to try it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But man, what I'd do with that now if I had it. But anyway, I got this box and it was a dud, and I was like, yep, I'm setting up one of the cats and just burning a sheet because I need to see it right now. I just want to make sure it works and all that. And the pod was dry. And I went to the next one. The pod was dry. And I was like, well, hopefully maybe I'll get like 5. Maybe. So, and I just kept going, and the whole thing was just a wreck. And it's like, I don't know if
terrible.
I could ever, I just wish New 55 was like, yeah, we're going to be here for a while. Cause like, again, I would love to drop, you know, and buy 3 boxes. And then it's like, I'm going to fall in love with something. I saw you said that. It was like, so now I'm going to fall in love with something that, and I'm just like, no.
I really hope I hate it.
Yeah.
Worst film ever.
Yeah. I imagine it's hard for them too. They probably don't know what the demand is long term and stuff.
Yeah,
so it's probably hard to predict. Because I'm sure they could bring costs way down if they mass produced it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I watched a video on their basically defunct YouTube page showing how it's made.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's some just kind of old dude rolling on, stuff like that.
All by hand.
It's all by hand. It's crazy. I'm actually kind of surprised they can sell it at $15 per exposure, given how much labor goes into it. But it's going to be fun. It'll be interesting. I've never used peel apart film of that size before, so it'll be an experience.
It'll be a YouTube video, we hope.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yes.
I got to show you guys if I screw it up completely.
Yep, yep.
I can't just suffer alone.
I know, Timothy. I wish that was like a YouTube video where you're just like, chink, and like, poof.
I have a friend. She used to work at the little photography store down here. Her name's Polly, and she is like an incredible type 55 shooter. I think she like triple mortgaged her house for what she has, like refrigerators and refrigerators full of this stuff.
And, oh my God.
And it's just crazy because like the stuff she does is just insane what she does with it. She's like a portrait photographer and just does these amazing portraits with it. And she was telling me about it, and that's when at that point I had those boxes, and I again didn't know what I had, so I was just kind of like taking stupid landscapes and thinking that like, oh well, if she's got two refrigerators full of this stuff, like it can't be that hard to find. And then when I saw how expensive it was, I was like,
you know,
whoa. Man.
Yeah, I hear about that with people stockpiling infrared film, and they've got freezers full of it and stuff like that. It's like, I don't know, I guess at some point you're just kind of collecting it.
You got to start
burning through it eventually, but it's hard when you know it's a finite resource. I did that with Velvia 50 4x5. I was just hoarding it. Like, I could never expose this because I know it's not available. And then I just realized, I'm probably never going to shoot it. So I ended up selling it, and I'm glad someone else could put it to use.
But, yeah, well, then you don't have to deal with the stress of that, too.
I know, it is stressful. It's ridiculous, but it is stressful. It's like, okay, you're like handling this like gold plate into your camera. Like, you don't want to... Yeah.
Man. That's how I feel. I still have a couple of boxes of the peel apart.
I was just gonna say, I was literally thinking that, and I was like, I should shoot it. I have one box of the color, and it's just sitting there.
It's hard to shoot it when you got one box.
I know.
You always want to have one left in your fridge.
It has to be like a very special project or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you always like want that one left.
In the museum.
Yeah. It's gotta be something that's gonna be in the Museum of Modern Art, for sure. Yeah. Otherwise, you don't want to expose it.
Well, hopefully that SuperSense stuff really comes through. I just saw like an updated video of the stuff that Doc has going on, and that one shot, or what, I can't think of what the name of it is, but it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks cool.
I mean, it looks really, really good what they're doing. But again, it's one shot. So, I mean, it's a completely different world than the 8 to 10 shots that we were used to getting. So, I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that this stuff has to go away, like that it just goes away. You know?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is it's not going away as much as it was maybe you know, 10 years ago.
And things are coming back, too. You have to be thankful.
Yeah. I mean, Acros 2 coming back and, I mean, E100 coming back and stuff. It's kind of incredible to think that would ever happen. But it's such a good time to be involved in photography because we kind of have all the benefits of digital and social media and all that kind of stuff. But we still get to enjoy analog, which, you know, and it doesn't seem like it's going away. I mean, as long as there's money in it for the manufacturers, they're going to keep doing it. So I guess that goes to show we got to keep buying film.
It's up to us.
Yep. Got to keep staying broke and shooting film.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I know. We'll be right back with some questions for Nick right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from @PocketPort. And he asks, he is the master of pre-shoot visualization. How long did it take to get there? Big fan, by the way.
Well, thanks for being a big fan.
Big fan.
Yeah, so Ansel Adams is one of the main guys I kind of studied in terms of technical metering and all that kind of stuff. His book, The Negative and the Camera and the Print and all that. And he was really big on pre-visualization. And I think when I read those books, that's kind of when it clicked in with me. And that was many years into my photography. That was probably 12 years into my photography. I like to think I was pre-visualizing in some sense leading up to that, but I think there's a lot of things in photography where you think you're doing it, and then you realize when you're actually doing it. You know, I was pre-visualizing my digital photos and stuff like that to some degree, but really not to the extent I do now with film. And I think getting prints made helps kind of train that in you, because you're not even just picturing the negative anymore, or even the scan. You're picturing how's it going to look hanging on the wall?
Yeah.
And you're kind of visualizing tones and visualizing lines and visualizing all that stuff as if it's in a frame hanging on a wall. And then you're, before you know it, you're pre-visualizing pictures without even kind of realizing it. Like the, you know, the liquor store shot I did or laundromat or whatever, like I just drove past it one or two times. And then I'm over the next several weeks, this pre-visualization is slowly developing in my brain where I'm like, I'm picturing it. Okay, straight on. Yeah, that looks pretty cool. How would it look from the side? And then I'm kind of picturing that. And then I start kind of bringing in the lighting. Well, what if I shot it in the daytime? Where would the shadows be? And what if I shot it in the morning versus the afternoon and things like that? And it kind of all starts to almost like a print developing in your head to where you're pre-visualizing the final finished print. But it definitely takes practice and it takes, you know, a lot of time and kind of repetition to do that. And I certainly don't do that on every picture. I kind of love going out and just seeing what happens and hoping for the best. I tend to do smaller film formats for that. But if it's going to cost me $4 a picture or $15 a picture or something like that, I'm going to try and pre-visualize the best I can.
Man, see, I like it that you even take it to the point where in that video that you did of the liquor store, you have an app that has your focus, you know, with your different lens planes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you went and you really mathed it out. Like, this is what it looks like from here. I think I want to use my 90mm lens. Like that's what, you know, I feel like when you do shoot film that kind of comes along with it.
Because like slowing down at that point.
Yeah. Like if you have a digital camera, you know, you can just test out, mm-hmm. you can shoot 2,000 shots and be like, yeah, I'm sure you're going to get it then, you know, but.
Yeah. And the digital, being able to shoot tons and tons of pictures, a lot of my students always point to that as, you know, the benefit of digital. You can take as many as you want. Yeah. But that's not necessarily a benefit because mm-hmm. we kind of think of it as like, okay, free pictures and endless time. But that's definitely not the case. The amount of creativity you're putting into this mediocre photo that you didn't think through, that's being pulled from what could be devoted to a much better picture. Wow. And so like kind of the spray and pray stuff mm-hmm. and all that digital, just like, oh, just take it. Maybe it'll be good. And it's like, no, don't. No. Don't take it unless you know it's going to be a good shot. And film kind of forces that into people, I think.
Great answer. All right, Nick. So we have another question for you. This question comes from 2071 Photo. Hi, Raphael. He says, after watching the laundromat shoot, do you prefer pre-sunrise to post-sunset blue hour?
In terms of waking up early, definitely not.
Yeah.
I generally try and make something work for dusk, but the way I decide whether to do sunrise or sunset or pre-dawn or post-dusk depends largely on the orientation of the subject I'm shooting. So like the Houston's Liquor one, that building facade was facing east. So if I shoot it in pre-sunrise light, the light is pretty flat because the sky behind it is evenly lit with the building. So it gets kind of flat and it doesn't have a whole lot of separation between the building and the background. So when I was visualizing that shot, I kind of pictured the sky behind it almost radiating a glow from behind it. And that would create a little more separation between the building and the lit up sky behind it. And then so because the building was facing east, means I got to do dusk.
Right.
And if it had been flipped the other way, I would have done it at dawn. As far as the laundromat one, I actually wanted to shoot that at dusk because, again, that building is facing southeast. And I wanted it to kind of have that illuminated glow behind it, much like the Houston's Liquor one did. But just with business hours and trying mm-hmm. to make it look empty and stuff, there was no other option other than doing dawn. And I mean, if you saw the video, I even only had a few couple months maybe where it was early enough dawn to avoid all that traffic of people coming up and doing their laundry. So, you know, sometimes the subject itself limits it, but a lot of it's just orientation and kind of pre-visualizing how I want the light to look behind it.
It's crazy that you waited 6 months to finish that video.
Yeah.
It's like five months later. It's like, what?
I definitely had a moment where I'm like, this video is never going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, three months into it.
Yeah.
I kind of almost forgotten about it. I'm like, I don't know. That thing's probably never going to happen. But then I got the spark in me once I saw the sunrise time inching earlier and earlier.
Man, I just love that when you can see a shot in your mind. There's only been, I've had a bunch of where I thought of a shot pre-shooting the shot, because I do a lot of like candid, not so much street stuff, but more like, you know, I just walk around town a lot and shoot, mm-hmm. you know, that's basically what I do. But then when I'm laying here and it's like 3 a.m. and I can't sleep and I'm like, man, I bet you Main Street looks awesome right now. And
yeah.
I can picture this with that. And I'll walk down there and there's like 2 cars and I'm like, yep, can't shoot it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just love that. Like when you envision something, then where you're just like, yep, this is what I'm going for. That's cool. It's a good feeling.
It's real fun when it works out too. I mean, you know, I do a pretty slow style of photography with, you know, view cameras and a lot of landscapes and architecture. So I kind of have the luxury of being able to pre-visualize, but I really admire like good street photographers and people who they kind of are pre-visualizing, but it's almost like it's a millisecond before they take the picture, you know? And they're just so quick, and they kind of, you start to see some street photographers especially, they're just really good at predicting human behavior, and they're good at kind of knowing, okay, that person's about to do that, or something's about to happen over here, and that kind of thing. Like Saul Leader, Lighter Leader. I love his street photography, and it's kind of very much that. He would just put himself in a position and wait for the activity to happen in front of him that he was expecting. And that's a whole different skill set I'm not quite as good at. I need to have a fair bit of time and sometimes multiple chances to get the pre-visualization to come together.
Wild. Good answers.
Yeah, that was a good like segue. Like,
for sure.
Like,
thank you.
And like street photography is like, it's pre-visualization as well, but just instantly, quick. Man. Never thought about that like that before.
Yeah, I'm not that lightning fast, but some people are.
Mm-hmm.
They make good wedding photographers too.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Man, so I guess we have to go to the awful hard, tough questions of the show. And the first part of the question is what your desert island camera. Like, you can only take one. I know you usually pack the same cameras in your bag with you when you go out and shoot, but you can only take one. Desert island. There is a film lab there. They will develop for you at this island.
Nice island.
You're never getting off of it, but they will develop your film. So what are you taking with you?
Oh, man. I'm probably taking this question a little too literally, but I think I would do my 6x17 because, like, just the wide panoramic shots when you have nothing but horizon.
Oh, yeah.
That's I don't think I would get bored of. it's and my panoram camera is a Shenhao 6x17 or 617 or TFC 617-A. I always get the nomenclature mixed up. But it's a view camera, 6x17, which takes a little more time. So that might keep me occupied on the desert island. I also just really love that camera. It's fundamentally a knockoff of an ebony 6x17. That's kind of what Shenhao does. They take like ebony designs and kind of knock them off. But which is a great design.
Yeah.
And it's $3,000 instead of $8,000. But it's still, but I love that camera because the 6x17 format is just so rad. And
it really is. It's so cool.
Cinematic, and it kind of reminds me of like, you know, Tarantino movie or something like Hateful Eight or something. Just these really cool wide shots. And I've never used the Fuji GX 617, but that might be a close second just because it's such a cool looking camera.
Yeah, it is.
That's another panoramic camera that's beautiful. But I have to say my Shenhao TFC 617A.
I had a feeling that's what it's
going to
be.
Good answer.
That's such a, like, I remember when I first started seeing you use that on your, well, I mean, I think you were using it from the beginning of your channel, maybe. But, man, I just was the jealousy and envy of that camera every time you're out shooting. I'm like, what? Oh, I knew exactly what it was. But.
I started off with a roll fill, 6x17 roll back for a 4x5. That got me by. That was, you know, I don't know, $600-$700 or something like that to get that thing. So a little bit lower cost of entry. But I found out pretty quick you can't really do focal lengths longer than 300 millimeters. Or I'm sorry, longer than 210 millimeters. Excuse me. And it's not because the bellows extension isn't sufficient. It's that when you pull the lens that far out, the light angles can't get past the 4x5 opening to the 6x17 rollback behind it. And I really wanted to do some longer focal length stuff on 6x17. So I was watching that Shenhao TFC 617A on Badger Graphic. That's where I bought it from. And it was like $2,200 or something like that. And I'm like, oh man, one day
yeah,
I'll get that.
Yeah.
And then I checked like 4 months later and it was $2,500. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So I emailed the guy. I'm like, what gives? It was like $2,100 or something, $2,200. He's like, yeah, they keep raising the prices on me.
Jeez.
So I want to get it sooner than later. So I ended up buying it and it's at like $3,000 now. So I'm glad I got it when I did.
Man, crazy. Yeah. Great camera.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a beautiful camera.
So there's a part two.
Okay.
And the part two of this question is the white whale. Is there anything that you want that you don't have? Like, is there anything that that's just been like driving you crazy that you want to try or haven't tried yet?
I would kind of like to find out what all the hubbub is about Leicas.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
You and me both.
I mean, I almost bought one. There was a real good deal and it was a little bit before I was getting married. So I just couldn't justify spending the money on that before.
Yeah, you would have been in trouble for that.
Yep. Yeah. Although, yeah, my wife's very supportive. She probably would have been like, yeah, get it. Makes you happy. But I just couldn't pull the trigger because I don't really shoot 35 millimeter at all.
Right.
My smallest format is generally 645. But I mean, there's evidently something about Leicas that people are crazy about. And I hear it's the glass. So I'd love to try that. The Fuji GX617, the big panoramic Fuji camera.
Yeah.
I would kind of like to have just as a showpiece. It's such a cool looking camera.
It is really cool.
It's almost like novelty size because you look at pictures of it and you're like, oh, that's a cool looking camera. And then you see it in someone's hands and it's like,
what the heck?
My God, that thing's gigantic. That'll break your arm. So I would kind of like to have it just to try it out a little bit, but it wouldn't really do anything for me that my Shenhao can't do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Cool.
There's always more cameras to buy, though.
There's always more cameras.
Yep.
To buy.
So true.
When I, like, 2 weeks ago, I was like, man, I think I have everything I need right now. And then I just bought another camera, like, 2 days ago.
Famous last words is what
they are. Yeah, exactly. Well, awesome. Nick, this has been so good. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, we really, really do appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This has been a lot of fun. I normally don't get to talk this much film with people who actually care about it.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Thanks so much for having me. This is has been a real pleasure.
Yeah. So where can everybody check you out? What do you can plug anything plug and all that stuff.
Yeah. My website, nickcarverphoto.com or nickcarverphotography.com. Got prints there if anyone's interested, but also that online course for master manual metering for film photography. If you want to try a little free preview there, it's there. And if you think it might be a fit for you, then take a look. But other than that, YouTube. I'll be posting videos whenever I can, which won't be as frequently as I would like, but it'll be anytime I can.
It'll be worth it.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Timothy, what about you?
Guys, head over to Instagram. I'm over there. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also post occasionally on YouTube. Just go to the search bar and search Timothy.makeups. I'm there. And that's pretty much all I got going on. Chris, where are you?
So, guys, I'm Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we have a Facebook page you can like and a group that you can join. And the group's really fun. We really love seeing everybody post.
Facebook.
Post more photos. It's the best part. Thank you again, Nick.
Thank you.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
First off, we would like to thank Nick for being on the show. Man, Chris and I are both so excited to get you on. You've kind of been a staple in the film photography world for quite some time now, and we're stoked. We're excited about this episode. We can't wait for everyone just listened, so we're pumped. Thanks, Nick. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on. And hopefully we can get you back on the show again sometime soon. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of tiers over there. Also, if you're a Patreon, you get the show a day early. So it gets released by lunchtime over on the Patreon. We also have a bunch of other tiers over there. We have some prints, stickers, pins, just a bunch of fun stuff. Check it out. Your support means the world to us. Thanks to all the Patreons already. And guys, we will see you next week with an all-new guest. Later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.